Welcome to the large-scale energetics workshop. I hadn't quite counted on so many, but there you go. So let me just say a little bit about how I got to this, and then we'll do a little exercise to start with. The workshop's going to be a mixture of experiential stuff and some concepts and telling you about the practice of working with organizations and nature. And the energy of those places. But it's important to feel it and actually get a sense of it yourself in your body, so it's not just a head experience. So we'll be doing a mixture of things. So I founded the Center for Human Emergence in the Netherlands, and we were working with organizations and trying to solve big complex problems through collaboration with organizations, like 20 organizations trying to solve healthcare problems using an integral approach. And it was all coming right out of yellow design, meshworks, and everything like that. By the way, the talking at the back is translation into Hungarian, okay? My Hungarian's not quite good enough to be able to do both. But I'm getting there. It kicsit modul beszélek. That's about as far as I get. It means I speak a little Hungarian. Then they reply to me in Hungarian. I have no idea what they say. So we were working on these projects. And what we were finding was they were so complex. This is classic yellow loves, like the complexity. They were so complex. We were finding we were kind of trying to match complexity with complexity. And we were going, there must be some simplicity, the other side of the complexity, that will help us work more effectively with these complex situations. And as it so happened, a lot of the individuals in the Center for Human Emergence were exploring energy stuff in their own way, be it Reiki, or I had, like, my bookshelf was slowly growing with Lynn McTaggart's stuff, and bless you, and Rupert Sheldrake, and, you know, various other things again. So I then thought, maybe there's an impulse for turquoise to arise here. And so I went back to the Spiral Dynamics book and read the description of turquoise, and there was a lot of resonance with what we were experiencing in the Center for Human Emergence. So I was, okay, we need to try to discover what could this work be that would work at the level beyond the complexity. And I did think of the Reiki stuff because, you know, when you heal the body, what you're really doing is removing the blockages and the stress that are in the system so the body can do what it knows that it needs to do anyway. So you're not necessarily making it do something different. You're creating the conditions for it to function in a healthy way. So I thought maybe you can do that with collective systems. If you got the energy fields clean of collective systems, maybe they would self-organize more effectively rather than trying to engineer them, which is what yellow tries to do. Now, that was when I encountered the work of Hans Anderweg and Rijk Bols at the Center for Eco-Intention, which was at that point called Center for Ecotherapy. And it was a four-year vocational training in learning to work with the energetic and informational architectures of large systems. We're going to start with a little activity, a little meditation. That's a meditation that is based works with some psychic tools. So what's important when you're working with energy is that you learn to kind of keep your system clean, to ground yourself, and that kind of thing. So we're going to do a little guided meditation. So get yourself settled. And it's always good to have 2 feet on the ground. Well, you all know meditation posture. If you already practice this kind of thing and you have your own way of doing it, then feel free to adopt your own method or process, but you might also want to experience a different one and just go along with what I have to propose. So take a couple of breaths, you know, get yourself settled, feel the earth pulling you to her, and your bum on the seat, feet on the ground. Couple of breaths. Now imagine that behind your third eye, so within your head, there's a space. Okay, and you can look out through your third eye at the world around you, through that space at the center of your head. And what you're going to do is that you're just going to say your name in that space, right? That's your space. And imagine it just gets cleaned up. So there's maybe a golden whirlwind that swirls around in that space and removes any stuff that's there so that it's this really clean, sparkly, clear space right at the center of your head. And just say the date as well. Notice where we are. It's for Friday, the 25th of May. And we're here in the Marbella 2 room in the Hotel Azur, Sofok, in Hungary. Ground us in place, space and time. And then just notice that around your waist, there's a kind of belt, and as you look down, there's a tube that goes down from your waist, a hollow tube that goes down from your waist right down to the center of the earth. Just drops straight down to the center of the earth. It's hollow, and it may have a color. Just invite it to have a color that is best going to support you through this workshop. And notice your name is written on the outside of the tube. And this is your grounding cord. This grounds your system to the center of the earth. And it's hollow because any stuff that's in your system that doesn't belong there can just drop down this tube to the center of the earth. Good. And now imagine from the top of your head, there is also, from your crown, there is a tube going up. Hollow tube going up. This one is golden in color. Goes all the way up. And, you know, if you may see it go a couple of meters up. Just ask, you know, your friends to take it all the way up. So you got this tube all the way from the up, coming through your system and then grounding you into the center of the earth. And then bring your attention to your aura, so to the space around you. And you might see it as a kind of slightly light blue boundary around you. Notice that it's underneath your feet as well as above your head. And just pull it in towards you to an extent that feels comfortable, what makes you relax. You know, if you find it's really far out, just tell it to come in so that your aura is at a comfortable distance, sometimes kind of arm's length either side is a good measure. And in the same way that you cleared that space in your head, clear your aura now. Send a, like a golden whirlwind swirling around your aura and just getting rid of any stuff that's there that's not useful for you now. And notice how it just drops down your grounding cord to the center of the earth. It's your space. You claim it, belongs to you, and anything that's not of use and that doesn't belong there, you release. And then what you can do is notice that coming out of your grounding cord, there's a bunch of roses, red roses, that come up and they place themselves around the outside of your aura. So these red roses are facing outwards on the edges of your aura. They're grounded by their stems down to the center of the earth. And they're there to stop any other energy coming into your system that doesn't belong there. So there you are. You're looking beautiful. You've got your grounding cord on. It's got a great color. You've got your golden cord going up. You've got this beautiful aura around you and these wonderful roses. Protecting it, and this clear space at the center of your head. Now just bring your attention to your heart space. Give it a little smile, a little inner smile, and just allow it to open as far as it feels comfortable opening. The petals of the lotus around your heart, just opening up as far as feels comfortable. Oh, and let's do one other thing as well. If you put your attention above your head, you'll notice that what you've got there is a great big golden sun. Great big golden sun that's your kind of higher self up there above your head. So just put your attention on that. And what you're going to do is that golden sun is shining through your whole body and your aura and your grounding tube. It's drenching you in love from above. It's golden energy from your higher self, filling your system, clearing out any last residues of stuff that's not meant to be there. And it's always there for you. It's always bathing you in its golden light. That feels better, doesn't it? All right, so when you're ready, come back to now, and you can open your eyes and maybe just stretch up a little bit to get back into your body. And when you feel ready, just lean over and touch the ground with both hands. Good. I've got all these light beings. Cool. So that's the kind of practice. You can use that anytime. It's good to do like a few times a day. Oh, yeah, drop my grounding, check my grounding cord. Is it there? Am I grounded? Golden sun, give myself a big golden sun. You know, these are things that you can use anytime. It helps keep your system clear and helps you relax and, you know, protect yourself where you need to if you're walking through a busy shopping center or something. Maybe that aura boundary, the red roses, you know, that kind of thing. So because you're working with energy work, it's important to do your energetic hygiene in the same way that you wash and shower normally. Keep yourself clear. Okay, so a little bit of some of the basic concepts first before we move on to some exercises. This is how I came to, I guess, frame my understanding of what this energy stuff was out of the work I'd already been doing. And I framed it in these three levels of architecture. One is the material level of architecture. So matter, where stuff happens, the results we get, the things we do, you know, kind of speaks for itself. A lot of the work I'd been doing, and I think a lot of us have been doing for a while, was things like working with the art of hosting, or working with Theory U, or doing group coaching, or these kind of things that are all about the field of relationships. So we're trying to get a clean field of relationships in the organizations or whatever that we work with. Because we also see that when the relational architecture is clean, when the relationships are clean, stuff manifests far more gracefully in the material architecture, right? So when we get the relationships good, things work better generally. We get better business results, make greater impact, etc. And that was where we kind of got stuck at the CHE when we got to, you know, kind of green, yellow, and we were looking for the next level. So I simply see the energetic architecture as being the next level to that. That we have material, we have the relational field, and then we have the energetic architecture where the kind of information of the system, as it were, resides. And if we can get the energetic architecture clear, then the relational field tends to clean up more gracefully, and the material impact tends to also happen more gracefully. So what you're really doing is you're creating conditions in the system, increasing the probability of a positive outcome, you know, of the purpose that you're working with. So that's why I think about it as energetic architecture. And it doesn't mean it's any better than any of the others. You have to keep working at all three levels, right? But when you're working with complex systems, and you can work at the energetic level, it means, you know, and it's a complex relational architecture, you don't have to engineer that relational stuff. It will tend to, you know, with some attention and intention, it will start to organize itself and clear itself up because the informational field or the energetic field of the system is clean and aligned. And I'll be telling you a bit more about how you do that towards the end. So what do we mean by energy? How do we make sense of that? Well, the way I make sense of it to myself and often explain it to others is it's like the light spectrum. You know, everything is actually energy and information. But there's only a certain part of the light spectrum we can see. Likewise, there's only a certain part of information in the energy spectrum we can see, and that's the material world. Some people can see auras. I can't see auras, but I can see all this stuff around me. But that spectrum is far bigger than the spectrum we can actually see. So there's a spectrum of subtle energies, you know, that extend beyond the material matter that we can see. It's simply a question of how coherent are the energy waves in the system, and when they reach a certain level of coherency, they become visible, as it were, in the material world. So that the process of manifestation is from, you know, increasingly subtle all the way through to increasingly gross, as Ken would say, and that's when it kind of clicks into this level of reality. But it's not; it's still energy matter, and it's still information, you know, expressed as energy matter in time space, essentially. So if we can learn to work with the reality as it's manifesting, as it's coming into form, then we're ahead of the game, as it were. Because once it comes into form in the gross matter, it's much harder to actually work with, because things move a lot more slowly at this level, right? But things move and change very fast at the energetic informational level. So the work of the way Hans has framed the eco-intention work is through these two triangles, really. That there is this level of concept or the idea of what we're thinking about, our vision or our wish for what we, the organization, wants to be. And there's the reality on the ground of how it is. And often those are stretched, right? That we have this idea of our vision, but it's not manifest. And the process of energetic balancing is to integrate these two triangles, so the concept or the idea or the vision, with matter, with reality, so that it actually comes into form and then you get into wholeness. Now, what tends to happen, and this is if you think about how stages develop, we have a click, a fit between life conditions and value systems, as it were, a wholeness. But at some point, the system feels ready to move on to the next step. It either has a bigger purpose in the world, or it's getting restless and building up too much energy where it is now, and it pushes through those points, and you get this symbol, which I'm sure you'll recognize is one of the symbols from, you know, many of the sacred traditions, always been seen as a holy symbol. So we're going from healing to whole to holy. And what happens then is that the triangle gets bigger, so the vision gets bigger, but it also means that the grounding needs to get deeper. So for those who are in the Volution talk, as we stretch up, we have to reach down, and often when we reach down, we end up in our shadow and the traumas and everything of the past that we have to heal to release the energy so the system can take the next step. It's another one of the ways that it's framed in eco-intention, that we have this outer manifest world that we can see, as it were, the material architecture, but that material architecture is coming out of the energetic architecture. It's manifesting out of the energetic architecture. We access the energetic architecture through our inner consciousness, through our intuition, through our inner knowing. So you have to go inside to be able to access that dimension of reality, which is why you do the kind of preparation work that we were doing just now. And so what you can do is if you have a vision or an affirmation or an intention, you're like planting an anchor out here, trying to put a blueprint into the energetic world that's increasing the probability that is what will come through the system and turn into material reality. And we're going to actually play with doing that a little bit later. Okay, so just a couple of definitions as we move into the exercises. This comes from a great book by Serena Rooney Dougal, who looked into how all the best practices that exist in this kind of work and what their discoveries were. So at one level in energetic work, we can talk about a receptive practice. And a receptive practice is just picking up information. essentially telepathy, clairvoyance, precognition, reading somebody's aura, whatever. You're just receiving information and interpreting that information and maybe feeding it back to somebody. Okay, that's a what we call a receptive practice. An active practice is where you actually try to impact the energetic or informational field of a person or entity around you, right? And they are different skill sets in a way. Some people, you know, one is more yin, the ability to receive information. The other is more yang, the ability to actually impact information or energetic fields. And we're going to play with both of those. So one of the things that Serena did was she summarized the conditions that they discovered for being good at doing receptive or active work. And these were the conditions for receptive practice. And pay attention because we're going to be practicing this in a second. It's pretty obvious, really, but the first is relaxation. So relaxation helps, you know, disengage, as it were, the analytical mind and open you up to be able to receive information, quieting down the analytical mind. So, you know, you've got this little thing buzzing away in here, the chatter, the chatter, the chatter, stilling the chatter to create the space for the intuitive mind. Grounding, as we practiced earlier, enabling your system to actually feel grounded and present. Curiosity. So an open mind, not watching out for any prejudgments you've got about what you're going to pick up. Curious about, oh, I wonder what's going to come in when I ask this question. Really trying to suspend judgment or any ideas you might have beforehand about what you're going to pick up. Openness, censorship-free. Yeah, this is a funny one at the beginning when you're doing this, because you might ask a question and pick up, you know, something, and then you'll dismiss it because it seems so weird or you don't understand it. No, not that. I mean, you know, this is what I mean. But it's that first impression that is actually very important to pay attention to. The first thing you get in. So, you know, watch out for that in a minute when we do the exercise, because as something comes into you, watch out for your censorship. You know, your mind censoring it, and make sure that you really pay attention to that first. And it can be very quick. You know, question, boom, answer. It can be right there. And an ability to know how to, you know, your energetic hygiene, how to keep yourself clean, grounded, make sure stuff's not getting into your system that's coloring your ability to be a neutral receiver, as it were, of information. Is there anything else? Okay, no, that was it. Let's go back a minute. Okay, so we've got a few more people than I thought, but I don't think we've got more than 50, have we? So what we're going to do... it's awkward with this microphone, but I'll say what I'm going to do, and then people who are listening, they'll know what I'm about to do. Okay, all you people listening, what I'm about to do is go around and give some cards to people, okay, that have symbols on, right? And I'll explain in a minute what to do with them. Yeah, just say you're going to be in pairs, okay? So pair up, find yourself a partner, okay? And I'm going to give one of you a card, okay? And that card has a symbol on it, okay? And it's really important that you don't show your partner what the symbol is, okay? And then I'll explain what you're going to do in a second. Thank you. What I want you to do then, receivers, get into receiving mode. And the senders, all I want you to do, you know, hold the symbol that you have, the image you have in your mind, right, with the intention of sending it to the other person, okay? And it's only going to take a couple of seconds, all right? So receiver, first impression, okay? Register that, and then I'm going to tell you when to stop and start talking. When I say you can start talking, I just want you to tell the other person what you picked up. And let's see. And it might not be exactly the same. You might describe it in a different way, but see if there's any what we would call a hit in terms of you picking up that information. Sorry? Up to you. However, you know, you best receive, get into receiving state. Okay. So receiver in receiving state. And sender, seriousness, by the way, is not good for energetic work. Okay, you've really got to get into fool's space and lightness and playfulness, and you know that helps energy to move and information to move. All right, so off you go. All right, that's enough, or else you'll start thinking about it. Okay, so just exchange with each other. What did you pick up? And then sender can show them the card. You can show them the card, yeah, after they've described it. You can show them the card, yeah. All right. Okay. Shh. I know it's exciting, isn't it? So I'm going to ask, so did we get a hit? Means that you were, you know, somewhere in the ballpark. Okay, a hit. Anyone would say they got a hit? Put your hand up. So did you pick up? Did the receivers who picked up kind of, yeah? Put your hand up if you think you got a hit. Yeah, so you were describing something. A couple over here. One there. One over here. Yeah, one. Just one sec. Tom, what? Yeah. There you go. There you go. Yeah. So he saw a symbol that wasn't his card, and that was the one he ended up picking up. And yeah. Okay. So we got a few hits there. That'd be a kind of maybe statistically significant. There were maybe 7 or 8 in the room. So listen, to do this the other way, this is complicated, but what I want, the person who's holding the card needs to become the receiver, right? In the next round. So I want you to give that card to another pair near you, but make sure you give it to the next sender, okay? So swap cards, but make sure that the card goes to the sender, yeah? Oh, nobody? Maybe they've all sorted it out. All right, will you give me that one? And you need to swap?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, you need to swap. All right. Don't look, or you'll pick it up. All right. So we'll do the same thing again. Remember to get into this state, and remember the first impression is what counts, all right? So you're into this state, and senders, keep it playful, but keep the image as clear as you can in your mind, and almost through your heart, your gift to this other person, okay, with a little inner smile, a little playfulness to go with it. All right. First impression, okay? Describe it. Okay. So, remember a hit. A hit is even if you're in the ballpark. So if you were talking about lines instead of a circle, or you know, even that's a kind of, you know, you're getting an impression. So can I have a sense of how many hits did we get this time round? One, two, oh, a few more. One, two. Oh, okay. So, okay, one, two. Put your hands up again. Kind of what count as a hit? Yeah, but half, you know, that's okay. One, two, three, four. Okay, you see, we're beginning to create a cosmic groove here, so it's becoming easier. And that, you know, as you practice this, but anybody can do it, right? But the fact that you've got this number of people in the room getting a hit in itself, I mean, there's statistically significant data there. So, you know, we're not going to spend much more time on that, but that's one of the practices, just that ability to go inside, be able to pick up information and trust that you can. Because like our rational mind is kind of, what are you doing? You know, that's weird. But, you know, the intuitive mind can just boop, pick it up. Okay, the cards, yeah. Can, well, yeah, I need the cards back. Yeah, just collect them in some way. Thank you. These are special kind of cards, by the way, designed for this kind of activity. They're just very clear, simple. But, of course, you can imagine doing this, you know, just writing some up yourself. Sometimes you can get people to write their own symbols, which potentially increases the impact in the field. So, thanks. Thank you. All right. Good. So has anybody, oh, thank you. Has anybody here done muscle testing before? Okay, oh, we've got quite a few muscle testers. All right, okay, quite a few muscle testers. That's good. So, hey, that's a good idea. So those people who are muscle testers, put your hands up again. Okay, so if you, some people who have, you know, if you've done muscle testing before, basically, you know. Anyway, if you've been exposed to it in any way, put your hand up and pair up with somebody who hasn't. So keep your hands up, find someone who hasn't. And yeah, you'll need to stand up. So stand up. And find a bit of space in the room. You can come up this way. There's plenty of space up here. So pair up with somebody. It doesn't matter. You know, if there's not enough people who've had experience, just pair up with someone. Doesn't matter. There's somebody with experience here. Yeah. Okay. Just, all right. All right, good. Everybody got a partner? Who's not got a partner? Put your hand up. Who else hasn't got a partner? There you go, over there. Well, it's four of you, so sort it out. Okay. Straight on here. But the basic idea is information is held in your body, and your body will respond, you know, to questions based on that, on the information. So can we borrow you? So the way it works, and you may have come across a different way of doing it. Best to have you stand like that. Yeah, sorry. So the person who's going to do the muscle testing on puts their arm up straight like this, and your strength is coming from here. Okay, make sure you can see. Oh yeah, you want to sit down so you can see. Okay, the strength is coming from here, right? Not these muscles, but from here. And what we're going to do is basically, you know, muscle testing in this sense is push down and you're going to resist. See, from here. Yeah. Okay. And what's your name?
Marcus.
Marcus. So I'm going to ask you to say, my name is Marcus, okay?
My name is Marcus.
Okay, be strong here. Okay, that's like a rock. Okay, I'd like you now to say, my name is Sarah.
My name is Sarah.
Be strong. See, he can't. There's nothing he can do to stop that. Right? That felt different, right?
Yeah.
Okay, it's as simple as that. That's what I want you to do. Just notice and then swap over, okay? Just notice the difference in your body when you say what your real name is and when you say what, you know, think of a name that isn't your real name. Okay, actually, the other person, give them the second name, all right? Just in case you think of something. All right. Thank you. All right, so just do that a couple of times. See what happens. When you're done, swap over. Okay, when you're done, sit down so we know you're done. Yeah, when you're done, sit down. Can you're back in your chair? Can you put your hand up if you felt a difference in your body? Yeah, most people. Yeah, sometimes you don't, and that means energetically they say sometimes your system's reversed. And I don't, you know, I'm not a kind of, I don't do this kind of thing as one-on-one healing and stuff. But yeah, you see, I mean, it's, you know, your body, that's all if you douse, you know, for information with a pendulum or something. It's nothing to do with the quality of the crystal or anything. It's the information in your body that's making your body move in a certain way that's making the pendulum turn. So information comes through our bodies. And that's why, you know, for those who are in the Volution workshop, if you get into turquoise, you're going to have to heal your beige. If you're going to get into energetics, you've got to do your work on your body. You've got to reintegrate your relationship to your body because it's through the body that you connect to the information fields. Yeah, and so you can muscle test for some, you know, there's this one with your fingers, you know, whether you're strong or weak or some. There's this one I think is quite well known, you know, where you try to pull the fingers apart. Yeah, different ways of doing it. Okay, good. So one other thing, just to get, you know, get your mind used to the idea that there is something beyond what it can see. Just rub your hand, give your hands a little rub together, and then you know, move them apart, and then just kind of feel, bring them towards each other with the palms open, and just notice if at any point you feel some kind of resistance. You know, just. Make sure you're relaxed still and cognitive mind isn't active. And if you do feel a kind of boundary, just try pushing through it and seeing if there's another one. Just play with that a little bit. Stretch your arms out a bit further. See what, you know, whether you kind of feel a little boundary somewhere. Yeah, most people have got it, right? See, there's something there. Yeah, there's something there between the hands, you know, something that, you know, some energy that's creating some kind of boundary. You know, when you go into it, we all have our auras, but we actually have multiple layers around us. The tree also has multiple layers around us, that you can feel and, act, you know, get different kinds of information about. So just to really kind of, you know, allow ourselves to become aware that, yeah, there is this stuff going on, and the cognitive mind doesn't necessarily understand it, but that's fine for now. So what I want to move into a little bit is an active practice, this idea that you can actually impact energetic and informational fields through your intention and through the use of other things like symbols that contain their own information pattern. So a story about this project. This is Bob Yan and Brenda Dunn. And Bob Yan was a real rocket scientist, an actual rocket scientist, at Princeton University in the engineering department. And a student came to him with some research they'd found somewhere that was saying that the inner state of the pilots in the rockets seemed to be influencing the instruments on the dashboard of the rockets. And of course, this was serious, so this means why? Because those are really important instruments, and if the rocket pilot is getting stressed, then and it's influencing those instruments, obviously they're not getting an accurate readout from the instruments. Now, he was highly skeptical when he first heard that, but you know, she seemed to have a convincing story, so he let her go off and do the research, and she came back and, you know, indeed, statistically significant data that seemed to suggest that that was the case. So, at Princeton University's engineering department, they set up this project called Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research, or PEAR. So an anomaly is something that doesn't fit in the normal understanding of how things work, right? And what they basically did is they ran an experiments over 28 years with what's called a random event generator. And what it does is it's a computer connected to a computer, it flips a coin, basically, but then thousands and thousands of times a second. So it's, you know, and if you flip it enough, you get 50-50, right? So randomness, you get 50-50. And then what they did was they basically had people not physically connected to the computer and sometimes on the other side of the world actually try to influence that coin flipping. And they would use it, you know, use this, they did multiple experiments, but this was the classic one where there was a line. And they would try to, people would try to make the line go higher or make the line go lower, basically. And it seemed to be the case that people could actually do that, whether they were in the room or whether they were somebody somewhere else. But there was statistically significant data that showed when somebody tried to... Well, interesting question. Funny you say that, because I did this with what I'm about to do with you. I did with a room full of bankers once, and I gave them the instruction to make the line go up, and it plummeted. Like, there was still statistically significant data that they were having an effect, but it was the opposite effect to the one that I'd asked them to create. I always wondered about that. So they had to do. They did this again and again. The reason they had to do it again and again is because all these critical science journals and the other scientists were saying, "Oh, your research isn't thorough enough. You haven't done this or that." So they went back and they did it that way. And by the time they got to the end of 28 years of research, the likelihood of what they had discovered being chance statistically was 1 in a billion. So basically, Princeton University has statistically proved, beyond doubt, statistical doubt, that human intention impacts the otherwise random nature of events around it. Bob Yan finishes the DVD talk on this by saying, so we've proven this, basically up to you to work out the implications. And the implications are pretty significant, right, if you think about it. So we're going to, this is a random event generator. I have one right here in the room. So we're going to play with it in a minute. But first, you know, what does research tell us about how you can be most effective in an active practice? So we're no longer receiving here, we're actually actively trying to influence the information field. You have to focus on the end result, sorry, and not on the process of how it's achieved. Right? So what you're holding in your mind is the outcome, and you're not worried about the way it's going to get there. And so if we agree, okay, we want the line to go up, then what you're picturing is the end result of the line going up. So you don't need to worry about how or anything else, you're just holding that picture in mind. You can invite like your energetic friends, if any of you kind of consciously work with angels or any other things, it's like, dudes, kind of, you know, come and help me out here. I'm not going to go into more detail on that now, but you know, some of you are probably familiar. And as I said before, lightheartedness and fun work best. If you're kind of going, come on, then it's unlikely, because notice what happens to your body when you do that. You contract and energy doesn't move. So you have to keep it lighthearted as well. It's like, you upload the intention in a way to get for the line to go up, and then you've got to let it go. You know, and trust that it's going to be that way, and keep it playful and light, and an inner smile kind of always helps. Isn't this kind of crazy what we're doing? And this is a real fun one. The impact seems to happen, they discovered, after one has finished trying. It's what they've called the release of effort effect. And you're trying really hard to make something happen, you go, fuck it, I can't do this anymore. Ping, there it is. Yeah. So there's something about letting go of, you know, the trying too hard that somehow allows something to come through. Sorry, why? Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's because I think trying is grasping, right? And it's when you let go of that, and therefore it fixes energy. It's something that fixes something. The moment you let go, then the energy can actually move. That's how I would explain it anyway. Yeah. Was that it? Or was there one more? Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah. And doing it together, this is what they also found, can help get around the disbelief that you're making it happen. Because, you know, our mind is often, oh, I can't, no way I can do that. How on earth could I be doing that? When you're doing it together, then you can pretend it wasn't you, but it was actually somebody else in the room. Right? So it allows your kind of critical mind to relax and go, oh, maybe it wasn't me. Okay. So this is what we're going to do. Yeah, all right. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to flip this to the other computer.
You'll see a middle line, and then you'll see two lines like this, white lines, and those lines are the lines of statistical significance. Okay, and then you'll see our line starting to, you know, do that kind of thing. All right? Yeah.
I think it would be interesting to see the result of the generator before we do any attention.
Right.
Before we do any. Because I would expect that to be flat. Right?
Yeah, it would be kind of wrong.
All right, so we're going down, all right, everybody? Down, here we go. Very good. Wow. That's like an integral crowd, man. Look at that. The statistically significant impact here under the blue line. It's interesting because often what happens is, but maybe you guys are all very good at equanimity. Often what happens is that it comes down and people get really excited. Then, oh, look, it's going down. And it suddenly and it starts shooting up again. So cool. Any kind of experiences? Anybody?
Being the point that is moving, like the line, but like a bird woman, like this one that goes. Going down.
Well, I'm sure that would have helped. You know, anything that allows you to hold that picture. What we might try next is we can try up, but it'd be interesting to do it with our eyes closed as well and see what happens. Because, you know, eyes open, you're getting the feedback, and sometimes that's more disturbing to see it because your kind of body, your mind starts to go, oh, look, it's going down, yes. Can you do up? We could try. Yeah, you can try doing that. It's interesting, but you're likely to confuse the field because you're on one level you're saying up, but you're kind of in the manifest world you're pushing down. So that's likely to carry weight, right, more than your thought. But let's keep it clean for a moment. We can play on the third one, right? Let's keep it clean for the moment. And just try with our eyes closed, just for your own sake, see also whether it's a different experience. So we're going to go up this time, all right? Up off the charts. We keep it playful, keep it fun, keep it light, and see what happens if we do it with our eyes closed. Okay, off we go. Okay, not bad. Still a, you know, decent impact. It wouldn't count statistically, but, you know, on average, it was above the middle. Did you notice anything different, like having your eyes open or closed? Was there any idea why it might have been less, the impact, second time around? No. I don't know.
I actually experienced that my focus diffused somehow, so I lost the upright line.
Yeah, that could well be the case. Of course, if we're focused on it, then we stay focused on this. If we close our eyes, then all our thoughts and stuff start to arise, of course, again in a way. Yeah. Oh, we could do that. Now, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I want to do this last one because I think it's funny, which is, and I've not done it before, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. So we're going to decide for ourselves one thing, and we're going to tell the machine another thing. Okay, so what are we really going to try to do? Okay, we're going to try and do up, all right? We're going to try and do up, all right? But we're going to tell the machine down. Okay, so we're going to try and do up. Yes, we're all going to try and do up. Yeah, we're clear on that? Okay, we're going up, Come on. Up to you if you want to keep your eyes open or closed. Interesting, eh? Anybody got an experience or like about, yeah?
Come on, you can do it. come on, you can. And I was thinking, oh, it's interesting because it's very suggestive because the line is blue. It's like it has a color gravity.
That's an excuse. Yeah, interesting. I don't want to go into now a discussion about why that might be, but anyway, you get the idea, right? So that, you know, in 28 years of research, thousands and thousands of experiments basically showing beyond statistical doubt that human intention affects otherwise random generation of events. And it increases exponentially when you collectively have a shared intention as well. That's what they found as well. If a group is cohered around a purpose or something. They found that practiced meditators had a bigger impact. So people who were used to being able to quiet their mind, who could get themselves into the conditions, really. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So emotionally, they found that couples doing it together, actually when they were doing readings like we were doing before, like reading the thing, when there was more heart connection in it, then the impact was greater, yeah. If you care about the end result, yeah. Well, that's interesting because if you care too much, you might be getting really attached to it. So there's a care that's like, there's plenty of studies to show that prayer has an impact on healing. And that's a care from, a heart, but maybe not a grasping kind of care. I guess that's the distinction. Yeah. How does it? I don't know. To be honest, and I haven't been able to find anything about it either. But there's plenty of stuff that I'm just reading actually the latest book by Bob Yan and Brenda Dunn called Consciousness and the Source of Reality or something. So there's plenty of stuff out there about all of this, so I'm not going to go into it too much now. Include the DVD set I'd really recommend because you get to hear them actually talking about it and things in lectures. Okay. All right, so if we can accept that through our intention and attention on things, we can affect stuff around us, okay, that gives us the possibility to be open to the stuff I'm about to tell you about. Okay, we've got half an hour. All right, so I'm going to go into now this example of an active practice called eco-intention that Hans was the founder of in the Netherlands, initially started the work in Germany together with Rijk Bos. And before I forget, there's a workshop tomorrow where Hans is going to talk about how we're applying this to Europe, to the field of Europe, and there's some people in Hungary who are actually actively working and in Poland actively working in these locations using this approach. So this is an experiment for us to work at this scale geographically, but I'm going to tell you more about how I've worked with it organizationally. So how does this process work? And when I was trying to understand it for myself, I kind of called it systemic energy tuning. You're kind of trying to align energetic values, basically, to get them to a certain place that the system can be healthy and effective. So what you do is, say you've got an organization and the person is open to it. So the example I'm going to give you is the Impact Hub in Amsterdam back in 2011. And the first thing you do is you sit down with them and you get them to define what we're talking about here, what's the project, what's the name of it, and what are the goals that you want to achieve within the coming year. So what's important when working with energy is that you bound the work in time and space. You have to create the container for energy to work, or else it doesn't have a context to work in. So this is why you have to set clear goals and intentions and a time by which you want them to be achieved. Okay? So you formulate the project. You check the name as well. So you're working with them to try to find the best name through dowsing. I'll say a bit more about that. And then what you do is you do an initial scan of the project to check a number of energetic values. And I'm going to tell you about those energetic values in a second. But it's like if you were going to the doctor and you wanted a checkup, right? And you say, you know, tell me how I'm doing. And they'll look at a number of different parameters to tell you how healthy you are. It makes a difference if you say, in 6 months' time, I want to climb Mount Everest. Then they'll give you different information. So that's why it's important to set the goals that you're trying to achieve, because it's within that context that you're asking how fit is this system to be able to achieve that purpose, basically. All right, so you do a scan. The steward or the guardian is the person who's ultimately accountable for the system as a whole. So there's someone, it may be a team of people, and you can check with the system whether these are, you know, whether these are the people who fit, but they're the ones who are, in a way, holding the field of the system as a whole. Okay, so during the process of working energetically, you are also working with the stewards to help them understand the energetic information and relate it to the what's happening on the ground in the organization. And you're also helping them work with affirmations so that they're continually holding their goal and purpose and keeping that imprint, as it were, in the field. So how do you actually connect to the energetic architecture of a system? Well, you can do it through a map. So this, for example, is a map of a piece of land. You could do it through the floor plan of an organization. You can do it through the name of the project. I don't know if anyone's ever had a reading from a psychic, but what they'll do is they'll often ask you to tell them your name a few times. They may give me your date of birth. And what those are like anchors or resonators, as we would call them, that enable them to connect to the information that's held in the field. Okay, so what you're doing here is you're creating a resonator, and it's quite simple. You shrink the map down to a small size, a small circle that you put on a piece of A4 paper, and then you create a boundary around it that's like a sound box that enables you to kind of contains the energy, but also amplifies it in a way that you can connect to it. And then, quite simply, if you put your hand, once you've practiced, you know, receiving and this whole energy and able to get into that space, putting your hand over the map on the bit of paper, that's how you connect to the project. The energetic architecture, it's as simple as that, in the same way that the psychic asks for your name. And then you can use dowsing to be able to get the various information that you ask. So during you do this initial intake scan, and then you're trying to find out, okay, what does the system feel it needs as its next step? Does it need more grounding? Does it need this? Does it need that? You're always asking the system what it needs. And I'll talk a bit more in a sec about the kind of interventions that you can be making. Testing for an intervention, and then you carry out what the system asked. You know, if it says, I need this, then that's what you do. And then you check again, normally around every 10 days or so, but again, you ask the system, you know, and when do we need the next checkup? Basically, on how many days, and it'll tell you. And then you do the next checkup. You get the new reading of the values, and you check again what kind of intervention would be most appropriate for the system now. And that process, and what you're continuing to do is coach the steward. So you're in touch with the steward regularly, finding out what's going on the ground, feeding back the energetic data to them, helping them make the link between them, and helping them keep their intention clear. Now, that process of balancing the system and helping the energetic values get to the place they need to be can take around 9 months, although it gets continually quicker, right, Hans? It seems to speed up to do with the grooves, as it were, in the morphic field. But, you know, you're talking about a process of 6 to 9 months. The reason it takes that long is not because it takes that long to change the energy. Because when you're working with energy, you can change it like that. It's outside time and space. Click. It's because it takes that long for the human beings in the system to integrate the energetic changes and be able to ground them and pull them in. Right? And the first phase, you're actually actively balancing the system and getting the energetic values to the place they need to be. There's a point of period of stabilization for a couple of months where all the sub parts of the system come into alignment, and then there's a continuation phase where you can occasionally just do checkups to see if it's still on track, as it were. So what I'd like you to do, that we use, just another activity to break things up a bit, we use symbols. For one of the things we use to balance the system is symbols. And the simple way you do it is you put the symbol on the map, you turn it till it clicks in, and then you let the two things talk to each other. They're basically two information fields talking to each other. So the information of a symbol is communicated into the energetic field of the system you're working with. So I just want to give you a sense. This is one of the symbols we use. I'm not going to tell you yet what it's for, but if you just relax for a minute, tune into this symbol. I'd love to just hear, what impact does it have on your body? What do you notice? Any thoughts? What happens? How does your body respond when you tune into the symbol? Sorry? Trust? A kind of relaxation and trust. Uh-huh. Yeah, same thing? Sorry? What? Growth. Okay. Slows down the heartbeat. That would make sense. Yeah. Uh-huh. Bingo. This is the primary symbol for grounding. So you would expect the energy to drop, as it were, in your body, for you to feel like trust. That it's kind of. And anybody know what the symbol is, where it comes from?
Yeah, the Hebrew alphabet.
That's right, it's the Hebrew alphabet, tzadeh. Yeah, the Hebrew alphabet, that's right. And so over time, you know, Hans and the team and other practitioners have found that different symbols have different effects on the project. You can feel it in your body, and then you try it out basically on the projects and you see what impact it has. This is a very good one for helping a project to ground.
Yeah.
No, it's the symbols themselves. The symbols have information in them. And all you are doing with your intention is you're requesting that the information in that symbol connects to the energy field of the organization or system you're working with. A lot of trial and error, right? But also just feeling them in your own body and then seeing how they work in, No, you don't need to understand it. You just need to feel it and then. So over time, basically, we built up a kind of toolkit of different kinds of symbols and colors, all which seem to have different impacts. Here's another one. Try this one and see what this one does. A heart opening, very good, yeah. Any other, a sense of lightness, any other? Spiraling, yes, makes sense, yeah. Breathing faster, yep. What? A centering, yeah. Elevation, yeah. Disturbance, yeah, could well be. Yeah. What this does is this is a symbol that seems to help shift blocked and stressed energy from the system. It basically creates this kind of a movement, really. It gets stuff moving and released from the system. So yeah, I mean, disturbance, stuff speeds up. What did somebody else say at the beginning? You nodded your head. Yeah. So that's the.
Yeah.
Can harmonize the system. Yeah. So there anybody? This is another Hebrew symbol, right? The vav. And. It means and. Oh, okay. Did you know that? Okay.
I mean, not like the end of something, but you and.
And. Yeah. And a connector. Yeah. Okay. So. Okay, 15 minutes. Good. So, how would we describe then the health, the optimal health of the energetic field of a system? Okay, so this is. It has a coherent form in the material world that can hold and channel its maximum life force. So imagine life energy coming in to a container in the material world. That form is so coherent that the full force of its potential can be manifested. It's why Steiner said we should all eat organic food, a biodynamic food, because it makes the physical container of our body able to receive the kind of information and the more subtle energies and things that are important, the container to be more coherent, to be able to work with the energy. It has the information it needs to perform its function in the context of a bigger whole. So it's got the programs, basically it's got the info that it needs. There are no blockages or noise within the system distorting the information flow. So as the information comes in, it can come through clearly and manifest. And it has the life energy it needs to be able to function to its maximum potential. Right, so this is what we're trying to get to, as it were, in the system. Enough life energy. You can have low chi, you can have high chi, you know, you can have different, but the appropriate amount of life. And if you have too much, then you're kind of hyper. If you have too little, then you're tired, right? So the right amount of life energy to fulfill the purpose. Yeah. So the way we, if you take that concept, the way we turn the language that we use to be able to measure that, because you have to have an agreed language, basically. So how are we going to measure these different aspects? So we first thing, how grounded is the system, right? And we use a percentage scale for that. So when you're dowsing, you're asking how grounded is the system at 0 to 100%. You go around the scale until the pendulum turns, and then you know that that's the number. Okay, so it's a percentage scale. How grounded is it? How adequately is its own information field integrated? So the information of the system, how well is it integrated within the actual organization itself? Is it just hanging up here, or is it really come into the system so it knows what it's meant to be doing and is able to turn that information into form and into manifestation? Now that's using something called the Bovey scale, which actually came out of France after the Second World War, a guy who was working on the vitality of food. And at that point, dowsing was still an accepted thing in the French society. And he came up with this scale that was measuring the vitality of food, how much energy food gives you, basically. And that's the scale we use to measure this particular. You douse it again. You douse. Yeah, so all of the dowsing, remember dowsing is information coming through the body, basically. You ask the clear question. It's always important when you're working with energy, you know, what is it you want to ask? And then you get the, you know, the answer through the body, and you can do it through muscle testing or dowsing, or some people just get it and know the number in their head. But, you know, some doing dowsing can help to check that and make sure it's grounded. Dowsing is, you know, working with a pendulum or something. Yeah. How fit it is within its context was the next one. So any organization or system is part of a bigger context, right? So any holon is part of a bigger holarchy. And the question is, how well is it adapting and fitting to that environment, to its life conditions? So that's what we call the percentage of organization and adaptation, the POA. And that's another thing that we measure using a percentage scale. How much life energy is present? We use the Reichian term orgone. It's the language we've chosen to use around that, how much orgone is in the system. and how much blocked and stressed energy is present. Again, Reichian, Willem Reich, terms Dor and Oranor, meaning stressed energy, and Dor meaning blocked energy. So blocked and stressed energy are two other things that we measure. So those are the kind of, when it goes to the doctor, as it were, these are the things we check. Right? And we check them at three main levels of the system. The concept level is the level where visions and plans and ideas are made. The realization level is the level that things actually get done, get turned into reality. And the contact level is where communication happens internally within the organization, but also externally. And what often, of course, comes in first is the idea, right? And what the experience has shown is that the energy actually goes idea, then it needs to go down into some kind of realization. It needs to be grounded somehow in practice, and only then does the communication land. So for example, if you just got the idea but you haven't done anything to try to manifest it and you try to communicate it, the energy just does this, whoop, disappears off again. You know, how many times have you kind of tried to convince somebody of something and it's just an idea, you've not done it yet, and it just flies off. The communication lands when you've actually done at least some level of realization, which is why the whole design thinking, rapid iteration, prototyping process works well, because it's like, okay, first thing we can do here, communicate, get the feedback, okay, next iteration of the idea, ground it in action, and then communication again. So at those three levels, we check all of these different qualities of the system. See how grounded is it at concept level, contact level, realization level, middle level, often talk about. All right, so therefore, logically, in a way, the kind of interventions you can make to support the system, so these are the options that, you kind of give it, as it were. You can help it to ground, right? And it's nearly always the first thing that a system needs is grounding. Because if you try to do any other kind of intervention before the system is at least 40% grounded, it just disappears off again. So grounding is the first thing. And you notice even just through grounding, it starts to change some of the other parameters as well. You can bring the system into appropriate contact with its own information field, so really help it to integrate its information, its concept, its ideas, and its vision, really bring it into the material world, into the realization level. You can help it access information from other information fields. So let's say it doesn't have that within its own system, but it needs the information to be able to fulfill its purpose. Then you can use certain symbols that contain a lot of information, that are like kind of fractally full of information. I think the Sri Yantra is probably the best example of that as a symbol that really helps a system connect to another field of information. And of course, you can clear blockages and stress that are preventing the life force and the information from flowing. So there are different kinds of symbols, different kinds of ways that you can actually do these different interventions, and you're constantly asking the system, what would work best for it. I just wanted to give you an example here from right at the beginning of eco-intention that came out of something called resonance therapy, where Hans and Reich were working in Germany. This was an example, and sorry, this text is in Dutch, but this was an example of a place before they had done the resonance therapy, and then 3 years later after the resonance therapy. So you can see from the photo how the vitality has increased. But in that period, they had a lot of researchers, from universities, from the Czech Academy of Sciences, I think, Hans, who all kind of poured out and had control plots and were researching the land that was balanced, researching the bit that wasn't balanced, and all came back saying yes. This shows statistically significant increase in vitality of the land that has been balanced and the land that hasn't been balanced. So there's loads of data out there, but the problem was, somebody asked me yesterday, when I was on a call describing this to them. Why isn't everybody doing this? You know, if it's all been proven and researched and it makes them, why isn't everybody doing it? Well, it's a consciousness thing. You know, ultimately, it's like with the Princeton guys. Bob Yarn says, somebody actually said to him at some point, even if this were true, I wouldn't believe it. And you're kind of, well, but that's unfortunately the reality. You know, you can try to prove it as much as you want. And which is why actually Hans and Reich decided that the only way that they could prove it to people was to train them to do it themselves, which is why they moved out from the German project to the Netherlands to actually work with the eco-intention training. Okay. So I just want to show, you know, it's all been pretty rigorously researched. Every project that is done, there's an intake scan and there's an outtake scan. So you get the data. Most of them show statistically significant positive impact. So these are the kind of questions we ask. You know, financial state of the company is good. Profit of the products is good. The organization is working well. Communication's good. And then you see the increase in those values over time. And, you know, you just analyze those statistically to see which are significant and not. And the pattern is there's nearly always statistically significant positive impact on those projects. So this is the more objective, let's say, way of measuring. You can also talk to the stewards or the guardians of the system, and there's some videos on the Eco Intention website, although I think they're in Dutch, right, at the moment. No? Some in English, the videos? Okay, so there are videos on the Eco Intention website of the guardians of the systems talking about the impact that this has had on their organization and on themselves as well. This is an example from the hub. One of the things you have to do is it's not just balancing at a distance, but you actually have to go to the location and feel to what extent the energy is actually coming into the system. And then you measure certain parameters, like the radiance of the energy in the system. And it's actually just the fact of physically being there helps to ground the energy work in the location as well. So part of what you do is pick key places within the organization and do some checking as to whether the energy is actually landing there. Just a quick example from the hub. These were the kind of goals and affirmations that they had. You know, we're a healthy, resilient team. We invite diversity. Then they did an I, we, it thing on it, you know, a revenue figure. And we plot the development of the energetic values on spreadsheets, so on an Excel spreadsheet. All the data is entered into a spreadsheet so that you can show it to the guardian and talk them through how things are moving. So this is, for example, the negative, the stressed and blocked energy that comes up to its zero target. This is the grounding. So this was mine below zero initially, the grounding. And that's the first thing that starts to increase until it's 100% grounded. And there are various important moments, like when different energetic criteria cross each other on the graphs, you notice certain things happening in the organization, etc. So I don't have much time to go into detail now, but it's all pretty... Doing this kind of thing, you know, entering them into a spreadsheet is also part of what grounds the whole system as well, just the practice of doing that. So this was a progress report from the hub. A few months later, these are the kind of things that they were saying. You know, we have more energy and space to focus on the future. We seem to have more time available. That's a really common report. People suddenly find time frees up. There's not so much stuff in the way. Greater clarity, you know, all sorts of positive things that were emerging. And this was how they scored, you know, their goals, as it were, where they were at with it. One of them said, I have no doubt we'll be reaching these goals in the relatively near future. So there's lots and lots and lots of examples. This has been going for 20 years or something, the work that Hans and Reich have been doing, and all of the projects that they've done in organizations and large pieces of land have been evaluated. You know, so there is a strong body of research behind it all as well. And for the first time, we are going to be running the four-year vocational training in this work in English. So up until now, it's only been run in Dutch. We've done a course in English before. But in October, We're going to, on the east coast of the US, we're going to run the first 5-day intensive in English on this, and it'll be followed by a 3-module online program that gets you the equivalent of the first year diploma, essentially, of this work, and then you can move into the second year, which again will be a combination of in-person and online. So there is a little introduction to this kind of thing on the Ubiquity website as well, called An Introduction to Energetics. If you go to ubiquity.courses, you'll see a small course there. It's 6 modules of me just, you know, teaching about this stuff. So you can find some more information there. There are flyers at the back of the room as well. Oh, there were, but they're kind of there somewhere. About the event in October, but also in English about the training program and also how you can work with it in companies, in organizations as well. So, 5 o'clock. If you do have questions to us, feel free to hang around, and Hans and I will stay here, and you know, we can chat. Thanks very much for coming and for your attention, and hopefully this will inspire you. Don't forget the session tomorrow with Hans as well.